Hello once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm your host, Katie Britton. It's the beer show on Vox Pop today, and we have a great panel in studio with us. We thought we'd squeeze them in again right before the holiday season, so you know what to get and drink with your meals and what to make beforehand. So we want to know what you are making, and if you have any questions for our panel, which includes George DePiro, the co-owner and head brewer at Druthers in Saratoga Springs, New York. Paul McRelane is the head brewer at Schmaltz Brewing Company in Clifton Park, New York. And Roger Savoy is owner of Hennessy Homebrew Emporium in Rensselaer, New York, and Cambridge, West Boylston, and South Weymouth, Massachusetts, and a new one now in Downstate, New York.
New Rochelle.
All right, so now you have a slew of them.
Five now.
With many minions.
Right. Minions.
It's an empire.
Yes. Small.
And Paul, you are now with Schmaltz.
I am. It's a wonderful new 50-barrel brewery in Clifton Park, New York. We make tons of beer, tons of great beers. And I invite everyone to come and visit us at 6 Fairchild Square off of Usher's Road.
Now, I urge folks to call in early with their questions, or if you want to comment about the different beers that you've been tasting around, because there have been a slew of craft breweries around that are popping up all over the place with new tastes out there.
Like mushrooms.
Okay. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. That's 800-34-TALK-1. So mushrooms, you say?
Oh, they pop up all over the place.
Oh,
there is a beer with mushrooms in it that's made out in California that I tried a couple of years ago.
How was that?
Weird.
I'm fond of the fungus we make most beer with. But beyond that.
Yes. Well, this was something that had a maple flavor to it, some weird mushroom there.
Maple mushroom?
Yeah, it was...
I would try that.
I can't remember the name of the brewery, but they had a lot of... It was kind of like a Belgian meets Thailand stuff. They had a lot of weird fusion stuff. Interesting.
1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK-1. So, Roger, what do you think? What do you suggest... that our listeners make for this nice autumn weather?
Well, there's traditionally a lot of people will make bigger beers this time of the year, something that will have a little higher alcohol, and perhaps for the holiday, something with spices in it, like cinnamon, cloves, and some other similar holiday type stuff. Mulling spices for cider is another thing. There's been an explosion in cider making, and mulled cider has always been popular in going back hundreds of years. So, fun stuff.
Excellent. Well, George, you have just put something down in front of us.
I did. I put down a beer called Goza. It's a sour German style beer. It's got some coriander and a little bit of salt in there just to help round out the sweetness of the malt to balance the tartness. And the tartness comes from a bacterial fermentation. And it's pretty neat. It's a kind of lighter style. The tartness makes it very quenching. It would be really good for the warm weather. But since this was kind of an experimental procedure I used, I wasn't sure it was going to work. I made it after the busy season in Saratoga, because I didn't have time for something to go wrong in August. So,
right, racing season.
Yeah. So, but today I finished up brewing a second sour beer that's more appropriate for the cold weather. That'll probably be on in 3 weeks. And that's a kind of Belgian-style brown ale that's going to be, well, I expect it to be pretty malty with some caramel notes, maybe a hint of burnt sugar, and, of course, some tartness. And so now that everybody knows what I'm planning, in 3 weeks you can come and see how I did.
Well, this has a nice yellow color to it.
Yes. It's a wheat beer. It's all light-colored malts, so it's just, you know, pale yellow. It looks a lot like a wit beer from Belgium or any of the lighter German-style wheats like Berliner Weisse. But the sourness and the coriander make it pretty different.
It's really nice. I mean, it makes you pucker, and yeah, it like releases all of your salivary glands, but then it has a nice malty finish afterwards.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty, yeah, it came out pretty balanced, and the first sip is the most shocking. Like you said, how it—that was a good observation. How it makes you really salivate because it does. Mm. But subsequent sips taste much gentler, and it's just because you're not—you know—people drinking beer in modern times aren't used to any tartness, so sour beers are unexpected. Even if you're told it's going to be sour, your mouth's not really geared up for that.
Well, we have people on the board, so let us go to Rocco in Arbor Hill. Hi, Rocco.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
All right.
Great. Well, I've recently moved from the Seattle area, so my palate is quite used to kind of Northwest Cascade-style beers. And out here, even when I do find Pacific Northwest beers, especially IPAs, a lot of their Cascade hops seem to taste citrus hoppy. And even in beers that aren't Citra hop, they seem to have a taste. I don't know if these beers are just old from transport or, like, my palate's changed now that I'm on the East Coast. And I guess I'd also like to hear about if you can tell me about any more local beers that'll have a Northwest kind of taste to them.
Well, we're going to try one of those today. I brought some Hop Mono, which has got a really sort of West Coast hop profile to it. And, you know, I think that a lot of people got sort of tired on the East Coast maybe of the sort of huge resiny West Coast style
hop bombs,
and went for something a little bit lighter and citrusy, like you say. I mean, citrus there, Cascade has a lot of citrus characters to it. So if you use a lot of Cascade, you're going to get that anyway. You should also get some floral notes from it. So I'm not sure exactly whether you're tasting beers that are Cascade or not. They might be Citra. They might be Amarillo. You know, there's a number of things they could be. I'm playing around with an old hop now. We've got a black IPA that actually has some Chinook in it. Hmm. And I love Chinook. And, you know, it's getting hard to find. But it's kind of, you know, a sort of a grapefruity flavor.
Yeah. So. Well, yeah, I appreciate it. You know, I just think maybe I'm more keen into tasting the Citra out here just because I'm just not completely inundated with the IPA that I was out there.
Try some Hop Mono. It's got some of those other sea hops, some Centennial. It's got some Simcoe in it. So it might be more to your liking.
Well, great. Thanks, guys. Great show.
Thanks,
sure.
Rocco.
Thanks.
1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK-1 if you have a question for our beer guys in today. And we are going down to Red Hook and Crystal. Hi, Crystal.
Hello. This is completely off topic, but my mycological friends would probably strangle me if I didn't say something.
Mm-hmm.
The name of the mushroom that has the maple taste is a candy cap. I know that it's off topic.
Awesome. Thank you.
No, that's actually very useful. Thank you.
Completely irrelevant.
No, not at all. No, you picked up from our discussion earlier. Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care.
Mycological.
Right.
Excellent.
Candy cap. I've never heard of such things. Now
me
we have
either.
To Google.
Yeah, to
somebody get out your phone. And we also have an email question. Rick in Albany asks, a while back it became popular for every big brewery to do a version of the Belgian wheat beers, and more recently it's been Bavarian-style Schwarz beers, black lagers, and like Guinness Black, Saranac Black Forest, and Sam Adams Black Lager. What's the next big trend in beers we can expect to see?
Ooh.
Sour beers.
Really?
Yeah. People are really developing a taste for sour beers. Yeah. George's beer actually is, I think it's delightful and light, reminds me a lot, you know, of a Berliner Weiss without the coriander, of course, but a nice light sour beer. And in fact, we make a sour beer that we release in the winter called Funky Jubilation. And it's a blend of beers. Last year it was a blend of six beers. And I was actually thinking of brewing a Berliner Weiss to be part of the blend to sort of lighten it up a little bit, because last year it was a big, dense beer and very chewy, but, you know, also quite tart. And we have a bunch of it aging in barrels from, you know, the year before last. It's 2 years old now. And it should have developed some really nice tartness by now. We dosed some of it. Some of it we inoculated on purpose. Some of it is there, you know, the microflora and fauna, I should say, in the barrel itself. little microenvironments. Barrels are cool. Mm-hmm. They're like their own little self-contained world. And, you know, I just love blending. It's just a whole other dimension that I didn't really get to play with very much before, and it's fascinating.
Now, do you do a lot of blending at Druthers, or no? Or are you just
no.
straight up?
Yeah, it's we're pretty small. It's just a 10-barrel system. We make just enough beer to service the pub. And if something were to go wrong or even just go differently than I wanted it to, blending it isn't an option. Bigger breweries, you know, normally
they can play
blend.
Around a
yeah.
little bit more.
Yeah, and especially at a place like Anheuser-Busch, where they're making a very limited number of beers and they're very large, blending is sort of normal.
That's standard. They blend batches
one,
all
yeah,
the time.
If one batch is a little off spec in one direction, well, one of the other batches that they have is going to be off spec in the exact opposite direction, and they can blend
right.
together to make a consistent product. At a small brew pub, you're just, you know, you're stuck mm. with it, and you know what I've done. As long as it's palatable, you just change the name and sell it as
right.
something
I remember
different.
That happening.
Now you know George's
yeah.
secret.
Yeah, that is my secret. So, it's
new.
You know, that's and
everyone
that works
it.
Fine as long as what you've got is good. You know, you never want to sell anything that's subpar. Mm-hmm. But if it's just not what you were expecting, well, mm-hmm. change the name. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like Terry in Albany. Whoops, wrong one. And Terry in Albany also wants to talk trends with you, gentlemen. Hi, Terry.
Hi, how you doing? I had a couple questions. The first one being, do you guys see the dominance of IPAs waning in the near future? I mean, what the next trend might or might not be, it seems like IPAs are very, very prevalent. And the second question would be, this is more in regards to a recommendation of trying to find, it's kind of a quirky one, but trying to find something. What type of beer on the market typifies something that the folks would have been drinking, the average people would have been drinking pre-prohibition?
Well, funny you mentioned that, because I just poured the Pump Station's Albany Double X beer, which is a 1901 recipe. It's got corn grits in it, invert sugar. We have we're doing the Albany Ale Project, and this is part of it. It was released last week at the Albany Institute of History and Art, and it's a dollar a pint goes to the Albany Institute of History and Art. So this would be what people might have been drinking close to 1901. This is based on a 1901 recipe that Craig Gravina and a cohort of his, Alan McLeod, I forget his last name, up in Toronto, came up with, along with Ryan. So it's kind of light.
Everyone's taking a sip now.
this is lightish, low alcohol. Because it uses invert sugar and stuff like that. I mean, it's almost like a cream ale. Nothing tremendously exciting, really.
No,
it's good. It's a good solid beer, but it is,
and it's actually got a lot more more character than a mass market
yes.
beer of today.
Right.
So
right, yeah. Even though it's light in body, it's got a noticeable hop character.
It
right.
absolutely does.
Right,
it's much more pleasant to drink than
yeah.
something that's sort
yeah.
of fizzy
and, right.
and
pre-prohibition, a style that home brewers made popular back in the 90s that hasn't taken on commercially too much, but you'll see occasionally, is something called pre-prohibition Pilsner. And that's a lager style that's brewed using corn along with the malt and a fair amount of hops, and they're usually brewed stronger, more alcohol than this. The use of corn
yeah.
is, it's limited, and it dilutes the malt flavor, but they used it because the six-row grain they were using in the 19th century in our country so widely was higher in protein. It was too high in protein.
Much
so corn,
higher in protein.
Corn was used to dilute the protein levels in the malt, and not so much to lighten the flavor, but it does have that effect also.
Right.
But,
and also because there was tons of it around. I mean, there was a lot of corn available for brewing beer.
But then you wanted us to prognosticate about the future trends in beer, and we had just mentioned that we thought sour beers would be up and coming, and I think that's probably true. And I think the reason you might see a small decline in interest in pale ales and IPAs
is oversaturation
is one, but it's also hard to get the hops now. It's just too hard, especially if you're a really small brewery. You have to contract your hops in advance, and it's absurd to contract for 200 pounds of something, or to try a new hop. You can't even do it without having a contract on it. So how are you supposed to do that? There's no spot sales of any of the interesting hop varieties anymore. So, you know, the fact that it's hard to get hops, and the other thing from a brewer's perspective, it's really easy to make a hoppy beer. I mean, there's really no challenge to making a beer and putting as much hops in it as you could possibly afford and then selling it to people. That's no finesse. Right. And from a drinker's perspective, I prefer balanced beers where you can taste all the ingredients that are going on rather than just having one of them overwhelm you completely. So that's what I think, and you know, we'll see how it plays out.
Well, I think one of the things about IPAs that is very interesting is that an earlier caller was saying that he's found a lot of IPAs that are just sort of citrusy. And when I'm making an IPA, I generally, unless I'm just trying to see what the hop is like, I use a blend of different hops because, you know, different hops have different characteristics. And the interesting thing about IPAs today, I think, is there's a lot more aroma hops available in varieties of aroma hops, not necessarily quantity, but you can get flavors in beers now that you could never get in there before. There are all sorts of tropical, you know, mango and passion fruit flavors you can get from hops, berry flavors, grape flavors even.
There are apricot.
There are some hops that have an anise flavor to them. I mean, there's all sorts of things that you can do. So I think that, you know, as a percentage of the market, IPAs might drop a little bit, but they're here to stay. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons they're here to stay is there are so many flavors, and they go with so many different kinds of food. I mean, you can have an IPA with a steak. You can have an IPA with a, you know, really hot food. I mean, it goes with so many different things so well.
But don't you think that what the previous caller was alluding to was the fact that so many people tend to use just a small portion of what's available.
Sure, and that I think that's boring.
Yeah, so you get Citra, you get Amarillo and
good
Cascades.
Luck getting Amarillo.
Well,
well, Terry, thank you so much for calling us today.
All right, bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK-1 to ask your questions about beer and brewing. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York. A newly renovated Hudson Valley boutique hotel featuring 12 guest rooms with modern amenities, holiday guest certificates available online, the1850house.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. Asheville Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. And Mass Mocha, North Adams, Massachusetts, presenting cowboy poet Don Edwards on Friday, November 8th, and crooked disco duo Javelin in the club Saturday, November 9th, massmocha.org. And McCabe & Mack, Attorneys at Law, Poughkeepsie, New York, representing clients throughout the Hudson Valley for wills, trusts, estates, and elder law, mccm.com.
And we're back with the beer show. We have George DePiro, co-owner and head brewer at Druthers in Saratoga Springs, New York. Paul McElane, head brewer at Schmaltz Brewing Company in Clifton Park, New York. And Roger Savoy, owner of Hennessy Homebrew Emporium in several locations.
Right.
But the mothership is in Rensselaer, New York.
But let me mention that it's only the Homebrew Emporium. We changed the name like 3 years ago.
I'm glad I'm so up to date.
I was on this station. You don't pay attention?
I'm with you, Katie. I was there too. I didn't know you changed it.
I've even been there and I didn't realize it. I apologize. Oh,
that's okay.
So Homebrew Emporium it is. All right, 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK-1. We have now blocked out Hennessy and Homebrew Emporium. If you want to ask your questions about beer and brewing, and there was an interesting conversation going on off air where we talked about food and IPAs, and George disagreed that it doesn't really go with all foods.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
I mean, for me, it's the hoppiness that really kills my palate, and then I can't taste, if it's uber hoppy, then I can't taste the food that I'm eating.
Right, and that's what I was saying. I think it, you know, lots of IPAs overwhelm, and IPAs today, I mean, you said if it's uber hoppy, many of them are. Mm-hmm. The IPA I make up at Druthers is actually fairly balanced. That said, if I were to enter it into a contest, it would actually be entered as a strong pale ale and not an IPA, mm-hmm. because it just wouldn't have enough overwhelming hop punch to survive in that category.
And see, for me, I think everybody's different. For me, what makes IPAs difficult for some foods is not really the flavor or the aroma. It's the extreme bitterness that mm-hmm. is in a lot of them. And I agree totally with George. I like to have it a really balanced bitterness with the malt. I like an IPA that's got a lot of malt structure in it. And mm-hmm. A lot of them don't have that.
Right. I end up using Munich malt and Vienna malt in my IPAs. It makes them a little darker, but it really gives them a good foundation. If you do it in a more, if you're trying to make an IPA, if you're a home brewer and or any brewer, I suppose, and you're trying to go like with a traditional British recipe, which would be lots of pale malt, a little bit of crystal malt, and that's it. But using all the modern American hops that you have at your fingertips, you really risk making one of those unbalanced IPAs where the hops are just overwhelming, because the pale malt with a little bit of crystal malt isn't going to give you a sturdy enough foundation for the hops to stand on.
All right.
So, for instance, this IPA, I just poured some of the hop malt.
Which has a nice mango character, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. It's interesting because none of the hops that I've used in this really are noted for that. But you know, this is Simcoe, Amarillo, some Centennial, Cascade. So, you know, some of the traditional players. And actually, it has some Summit in it, too. And maybe that's where it's coming from. Summit is, it's a newer hop. It's not a totally new hop, but it's got kind of a tangerine flavor and aroma. And if you use too much of it, it kind of can go garlicky on you.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And
Would
go well with pizza.
Or for the garlic festival.
There you go.
But it also has a tremendous amount of malt in the back. It's got lots of Munich malt. It's got layers of different malt flavors going on. There's some crystal rye in there. There's like a hint of anise in the background from that, probably. I can taste it. Some people, a lot of people can't pick it up. But I like to make it a little bit more complex, let's say.
It does have it's multifaceted. You can absolutely taste it from where it hits on your tongue, and then as it slowly dissipates, you get different flavors. And I have the bitterness left over, but it's not overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Not a particularly bitter beer.
It's very nice. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-34-TALK-1. We are going to Tommy in Neversink. Hi, Tommy.
Hello.
And what questions do you have for the gentleman today?
I was wondering, in the past, when American beer was so terrible and European was so superior, now we've kind of caught up with the craft breweries. Has that happened in Europe? Are there craft breweries the phenomena like we have here?
There are craft breweries starting up. There's quite a number of them in some countries.
It depends on what
country. Yeah, it depends on the country. And I read, and I can't remember who it was, but I read a recent quote from a Belgian brewer that was something like this. For the last 50 years, we've been, teaching American brewers how to brew,
now you're teaching
us.
Yeah.
It depends on what country. Spain, no, not too much, although there is a little bit coming on. Italy, northern Italy seems to be seeing. Actually, what you're seeing In Europe, though, is a lot of the craft brews from the United States are being imported and sold there. It's a huge market.
Really?
For are you seeing any of yours going over there, George, Paul?
Italy? No.
No, anywhere in Europe.
Anywhere in Europe. I'm trying to think. We're sending beer to Canada, Japan, Australia, but I don't think it's going to Europe
yet. But if you read the beer news, I mean, there's a lot going to Europe now. Mm-hmm. I was in Barcelona, and this guy had the one store I found there that had a good selection of beer had an enormous selection of American stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
But, you know, I would go out and say that I don't know how the quality is going to be when the beer travels that far, because the European stuff, when it gets here, is generally pretty poor.
Yeah.
Most beer should be drunk very fresh.
Right.
And there's some stronger dark styles that certainly age with grace, but the majority of beers should be drunk fresh, and it's like 8 weeks just to get from port to port.
Right.
So, you know, by the time it gets to the store, it's been kept warm the whole time. Right. There have been studies done where they put temperature indicators in shipping containers. It can get up to 160 degrees on the deck of a ship in the summertime.
No.
So the beer is getting brutally treated, and I would never get an American beer in Europe. That's, you know, I don't buy European beer here for the most part.
I think I try it just to see what happened. And I try something that I was really familiar with.
Yeah. Right, yeah, like if you got to
Sierra Nevada.
Yeah, and see how it makes the trip.
Exactly.
That's not a bad idea. But, yeah, since I had kids, I don't travel anymore anyway. So
that's for sure.
Well, while we're on the topic, if a beer is stored at a constant temperature, it's going to be better, I assume.
No, cold. You want
cold.
It to be cold as much as possible. Heat speeds up chemical reactions,
right,
including the chemical reactions that stale beer.
Right.
So as much time as the beer is warm, it's been staling at an accelerated rate for that time. What temperature cycling can do that some people would view as detrimental to the beer, certainly the bigger breweries would, is it can make a haze called chill haze form in the beer.
Mm-hmm.
It won't affect the flavor, but it will look cloudy. So big breweries go through tremendous effort to chill-proof their beer so that after temperature cycling several times, it still won't throw a haze. My beers aren't even filtered at Druthers, so they would throw a haze instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing that Paul's beers aren't polished enough to be terribly chill-proof. Like, you could probably go through a couple of cycles.
We could go through. Actually, we do chill-proof the beers. So, you know, and some of the beers are much more prone to throwing a haze. Like, the IPA has a lot of polyphenols from the hops, which really predispose it to hazing up. So if you see a craft brew that's hazy, an IPA especially, it's not... It's pretty normal. You could almost expect it to happen.
Right. If it tastes and smells okay, then the haze is just that chill haze that we were just speaking about.
But we do make some light colored lagers that we really go to some efforts to give some shelf life.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Tommy. We're going over to Delmar and Maureen. Hi, Maureen.
Hi there. How are you?
We're all right. Thank you.
I had a question about gluten-free beers with, modifications of our grains and more gluten allergies. Are you guys doing anything with gluten-free beers?
No. Short answer, no. I don't know if you've thought about it, George, but I certainly have, toyed with the idea of making a gluten-free beer. And we have a four-barrel pilot system that we're going to set up. And that would be a fun thing to try and do, because I've often thought there are no good gluten-free beers, and there really is no reason particularly that you couldn't make a really, a really flavorful and enjoyable gluten-free beer.
At Druthers, it's too small of a brewery. To ensure that my equipment was gluten-free, to do the gluten-free batch would be difficult, and then I wouldn't be able to sell 20 kegs of it fast enough to make it worthwhile. At a production facility, that would be different. But I did have a decent gluten-free beer.
Yeah?
Once.
What was it?
Yeah, it was the people from Saratoga Eagle, beer distributor, brought it by as a sample.
Was it a local one?
It was made by Widmer, if I remember correctly. And the only thing wrong with it was that it tasted kind of old.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you took the stale taste out, and just, I could extrapolate that, it was a perfectly pleasant American-style pale ale.
Mm-hmm.
And it was gluten-free. So, it can be done.
Who are the local folks
There's a local one that I kind of like that is, I mean, if I don't have a gluten problem, but it was, if I had to drink it, this was one of the better ones I thought was Steadfast.
Yes. I've talked to those guys a number of times, and I, for some reason, I cannot remember Steadfast. Right. Steadfast, you should be able to remember Steadfast.
But
yeah, that is a pretty nice. They make a pale ale, I think.
They do a reasonable job.
Good.
Yeah, they're customers of ours. And Maureen, you can also make your own gluten-free beer, there's sorghum and a whole bunch of other stuff that you can play with to make your own.
All right. Thank you so much, Maureen.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. That's 800-34-TALK-1 to ask the beer czars your questions about home brewing or what trends are going on.
It's awfully tyrannical, isn't it?
Well, it depends.
Yeah. Advisors, I'd say, is a better word.
Well, George, you have put something so nice, so dark, with a fabulous aroma, and then the finished, I get like this yeasty taste that I really want to go home and bake bread with this beer.
Pumpernickel bread.
It's this is a smoked porter that just came on, and it's brewed with beechwood smoked malt, which gives it the smoky character. Mm-hmm. And I figured after Paul's IPA that it was probably diametrically opposed, so we might be able to taste and enjoy it, and because the other beer I brought is a little hoppy, but it would pale in comparison to the hops in the IPA. So
sorry,
it's okay.
We like variety,
and this would be a traditional cold weather beer.
Man,
in any time.
Yeah, I've made this when we smoked version in the summer. I don't know. I'll make it any time of year though. I just my philosophy about brewpub beer menus is that you should have at least one beer for everybody. Mm. I don't expect everybody to like every beer, but I expect that everybody should find at least one beer. And so I try to make, right now I think we've got 9 beers on, and they all taste very different from each other. And that's my job to do. And I had no smoked beer on, so mm-hmm. I'll do a smoked beer. And this also doubles as my dark offering right mm-hmm. now.
Well, my brewers would love this beer. And one thing I really like about it is there is some smoke in there, and you can pick it out, but it's really, it's not the main game of the beer.
Yeah.
It's part of the blend of flavors.
I was saying about hops before, it's easy for anybody to just throw as much hops as they can. Well, with smoked beers, it's even easier to do that. If you use
hilariously
too much,
easy.
Yeah, if you use too much smoked malt, you can make, bacon lovers would even be offended. It can really.
I actually had the Vireman people make this using all Fireman smoked malt, and it was actually very good.
That's funny because I've had some beers that people have told me were, 60% smoked malt, and they were, oh my God, they were sucking on a baseball bat.
this is using Vireman smoked malt, and it's only about 18% of the grain bill. Yeah. And the smoke is subtle, but it's not invisible.
It's in there.
It's the first thing I smell when I put it to my nose is the smoked malt. So, mm-hmm. I like smoked flavors. I could go a little higher than this for my own palate. But
right, because you don't get, and it isn't overpowering on your palate. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's pretty easy to miss taste-wise. Obviously, when you smell it, it's there. But taste-wise, you could probably go.
Right, and that's kind of what I'm aiming for, because I'd really rather have less than more of some things. And so that's one of them.
Right, and it's not a huge beer either. You could have a couple of these and just enjoy them.
Yeah, this is only about 5.5%. Yeah,
it's very easy to drink.
Have you made it with the cherry smoked from Brisa? Or
no, I haven't tried that.
Ooh, that
yet.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, I've had a sample of that malt, but it was such a small sample, I couldn't actually do anything useful with it.
Yeah, the little tiny ones.
It's like, okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, the cherry is a nice aroma and quite different, of course, from the beach. Yeah.
Yeah, and smoked malt is highly variable. Mm-hmm. Even if you go to the same company to get it. Like from lot to lot, it changes. And if you think about how they make it, well, of course it's going to be variable. You make some malt, light a fire under it, and let the smoke drift up. And it's like, well, yeah, that's
and that's how
be
all
variable.
Beer would have been until the Industrial Revolution.
Right, when people learned how to dry malt with indirect heat.
Yeah.
So this is a step you know, to the person who asked what did beers taste like before Prohibition, well, smoky is one of them way before Prohibition.
Only probably not this good.
Yeah.
True,
yeah. Most of it was probably not this good.
Well, we have to take a quick break, and then we will be right back to the phones, and we'll start off with you, Nathan, all right? So hold on with us, 1-800-348-251-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK-1.
Support for WAMC comes from Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. Riverbend Animal Hospital, Route 9 in Hadley, Massachusetts, providing small animal medicine and wellness care, general and referral surgery, canine rehabilitation, laser therapy, and dentistry. RiverbendAnimal.com. Joyelle's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York, specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry, and gifts. Joyelle'sJewelers.com. Step Up presents Bill Maher Sunday, November 10th, 8 p.m. at the Palace Theater in Albany. Ticketmaster.com or the Palace Theater box office for tickets. And Lucky Chocolates, Saugerties, New York. Organic and fair trade truffles and treats, seasonal chocolates, LuckyChocolates.com.
And we're back with the beer show on Vox Pop. Today we have George DePiro, George McRolaine, and Roger Savoy in studio.
Paul.
I am double reading.
The other George.
The other George.
The other George.
Paul McRolaine and Roger Savoy here in studio with us, and we're going to go to Nathan
George
now.
Savoy.
We have three Georges. All right. Hi, Nathan.
It's
how
like
are you today?
The Foreman family.
Yeah. Doing well. It's very nice to speak with some fellow beer connoisseurs. So my question is this. Starts with a statement, I suppose. The last beer that I brewed was a dark chocolate, like hazelnut stout kind of thing, and it was absolutely delicious. But my question was if you guys had any preference as far as like mass produced like dark beers like stouts or porters.
Mass produced.
Not really.
No. not particularly.
A good beer is a good beer.
Well, what are you considering mass produced, Nathan? I guess is a question.
You mean like Guinness?
Well, something sort of like Guinness. But what I mean is like for example, I live in Western Massachusetts, so I'm just looking for good beers that I can get here, not have to travel for.
Try whatever your local breweries are offering. It's going to be the freshest, mm-hmm. so that's a good, you know, that's the best place to start. And you know, I'm sure you'll find some stuff. I mean, you know, throughout the country, I guess you know, if I think about it, one of my favorite stouts is Obsidian Stout from Deschutes Brewing Company out in Bend, Oregon. But you can't get it here, and I think it's really great that you can't get it here. Because,
yeah, their Black Butte is good too.
Yeah, the Black Butte Porter. See, I had the Black Butte Porter first when I went out there for my first trip, and I thought it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had the Obsidian Stout and couldn't go back to the Porter because the Obsidian Stout was even bigger and richer. Mm. But you know, they keep their production pretty close to home, so the beer stays fresh. And that's really key. So just go local.
Western Mass, you could try Wachusett's, Berkshire Brewing,
Barrington Brewing.
Barrington.
Actually, yeah, I do like some BBC stouts. They are really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Barrington.
And I don't know if he makes them, but my buddy Dan Kramer has a brewery called Element, and their beer is awesome.
Wandering Star is another one.
Have they had any stouts yet, Wandering Star?
I'm not sure what.
I'm sure that he must have done something.
I'm sure.
I think one of the best places in the area to go to is the Old Forge down in Lanesboro. The taps go from one end of the bar to the other, and everything they have to offer is fantastic.
And plenty of good local breweries out in Western Massachusetts to try from, yeah.
All right, thank you for answering my question, guys. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Thanks, Nathan.
Have a great day.
And then John's no longer on the phone, but John from Highland wanted a recommendation for pale lager.
Pale lager.
Well, there's several different types of pale lager. I mean, that could range from hoppy pilsners to malty Munich Helles. So,
it covers a wide range of territory. So it's tough. You know, Coney Island, which we just sold to Boston Beer Company, there are a number of pale lagers in that lineup.
Okay. All right. So, John, if you're still listening, Coney Island, correct?
Yes.
All right. And we are going to Glenn in Saratoga. Hi, Glenn.
Hey.
So what's your question for the gentleman?
Well, so I'm a vegetarian, and I find it really annoying that there are beers out there that wine I don't care as much about, and I know it's common in wine too, but I find it very annoying that there are beers out there that are made with or contain animal products. I figure the only way to really know for sure is to actually contact the brewery and ask them what's in their beer. But the question for you is it really necessary to use animal products in beer? I mean,
not at all.
It seems stupid to me. I mean, why would anybody do that?
If you're trying to be traditional about things and you don't want to filter your beer, you would use fining agents, and the fining agents are gelatin and isinglass. Gelatin is, you know, we all know what that is, and isinglass is made from fish. So those two things were used for many centuries for clarifying beer, and still are sometimes. Cask-conditioned ales often use those things.
And those all drop out. There's nothing that's left in the beer from those.
Right. It's also vanishingly small quantities. Mm-hmm. I mean, for something like gelatin, you're using two ounces of gelatin for like 10, 15 barrels of beer. So each barrel is 31 gallons. So
yeah, but you know how it is. It's the principle of it, right? But I guess the question is, would that, does filtering like that affect the taste of the beer?
Of course it does, yeah.
Okay.
Filtration can have a positive effect on some beers. It can have a negative impact on others. You know, when you're filtering out the haze, depending on how small the filtration size gets, you're going to capture proteins and hop constituents. Mm-hmm. You're going to take some other stuff out of the beer, too. Right. Brewers can compensate for that to a degree, or they can elect not to filter.
There are no other, like, vegan filtration agents that are, like, equally effective to gelatin and isinglass?
Not that I know of. I've been wanting to experiment with agar, but in all these years, I've never gotten around to it. So maybe your call will inspire me.
Some of them would use, some places use centrifuge and
yeah, you can
stuff
use
like
the centrifuge.
That.
You can filter the beer, and we filter our beer, but we don't filter it very tightly. We filter it down to about 5 microns,
right,
which is not really tight. So we're experiencing very minimal change from that filtration, except that the beer is really bright. And we're not using any fining agents, any animal fining agents. We do use some chill-proofing agents that have a tendency to also have some fining effects, but they're mineral products.
And, of course, if you're really concerned, you can always make your own, and you know exactly what goes in it.
All right. Thank you so much, Glenn.
The marketing possibility for you guys.
I'm sorry?
Oh, sure. And the labeling requirements on beer are kind of tricky, and I don't know if there's any sort of a vegan or vegetarian standard that you'd have to comply with.
Right.
I know that kosher is pretty easy. We're kosher certified. Organic is there's a lot more work involved, and I think for vegetarian I don't even know if there's a standard that exists for that.
No, there's nothing like that.
Yeah.
But I would buy a beer that was marketed as vegan, definitely.
Right, but when you're putting something on a beer label, I mean, I suppose you could put it on the outer packaging, but they're very specific about what can go on the label. And sort of health claims that, in particular, that you can make on beer labels.
It's a highly regulated industry. That's,
yeah.
All right, thank
you, Glenn. Thank you.
Thanks.
We're going over to Williamstown and Carolyn. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing well, thank you.
So I have a very basic question about cider. I'm making cider for the first time from my apples from the apple orchard. And I'm wondering, so I'm just trying out a few batches, and I'm wondering when you know that it stopped foaming, when you can then put it in a container. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use a pickle jar that has a waterlock type thing on it.
That's what you're fermenting it in?
I started out with just fermenting it in glass jars for the first couple of weeks.
Okay.
And it's still, it never kind of bubbled over like I thought it would.
Okay. Well, there's actually, the way you really determine whether or not it's finished is using a tool called a hydrometer, which measures the sugar in there. And when that reading shows you that there's no sugar left, then that shows you that it's totally finished fermenting. And that's...
Is that before you... I only just started with it, kind of keeping it open for a couple weeks, and then I was going to put it in a pickle jar where it'd be waterlocked. Do I use the hydrometer at this stage or later?
You have it in like a gallon jar?
Yeah, right now I have it in like a gallon jug.
You're right. Normally you might start with an in-the-pickle jug, although I wouldn't put it in there because it comes with vinegar in it. But you would... And then put it into a smaller... like a regular gallon jug, which has a small mouth on it. When you transfer it over, you want to have the minimum amount of surface area that is exposed. So you would put it in a gallon jug rather than a pickle jug, a jar.
Okay.
And again,
my pickled thing is like one of those pickle crocks that has the water seal. You know, it's like it seals totally in the water. That's why I was thinking I needed that. Like it would act like a water lock, right? You know, it's sort of like you basically put the pickles in and you put water on top, like it's like a seal thing. It's not a regular kind of ball jar type thing.
Yeah.
Basically creates a water lock.
Not sure what that is.
Yeah, nobody's sure exactly what that is, but it's whatever it is, it doesn't sound like it's traditionally what's used. I'd have to look at it and see what you had. If you took a picture and sent it to me, I could give you some idea rather than spend a lot of time on air when we don't have it. You know. So how could she get in touch with me? Can I just give
I will
her my...
give out, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, you can send me an email at roger@beerbrew.com. And if you send a picture on it, I'll be more than happy to go over it with you.
Okay, great, thank you.
All right, thank you, Carolyn.
Bye-bye, thanks.
And we can fit in one more. We have Tony from North Adams. Hi, Tony.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would love to speak to the gentleman what they think about ice brewed beers, and I will get off the phone and turn my radio back up for their answer.
All right.
You very much.
Thanks, Tony.
Okay, so ice brewed beers, I don't really know what that is. I think ice brewed beer is like a, I think that's a marketing thing. And all beer is brewed hot at high temperatures to stabilize the flavors and sanitize the product, and then it's fermented cold, and typically if you're filtering it, filtered even colder. So I'm not sure. I mean, we filter our beer at 30 degrees or 29 degrees.
Wow.
So I love the commercials where you see, you know, cold filtered or triple hops brewed. That's one of my favorites. Ice brewed.
I think Paul hit it on the head. I think the marketing guys go through the brewer's books and see, you know, they just read things they don't really understand and just look for jumps out at them. We could say it's brewed cold.
No,
it's cold
some of them,
for
what they
time.
Do is they freeze the beer and they scoop out
that's
the
ice.
That's ice beer.
And that's actually
possibly what they talk about.
And, you know, that's, I think, kind of a misnomer, too, because that's illegal.
It's illegal.
That's distilling, actually.
It's not illegal if you have a distiller's license in this country.
Right, but if you're a brewer.
Right.
Then it is illegal, which makes me wonder about all the people that have won Icebox at the Great American Beer Festival or the World Beer Cup.
It's like,
you don't have a distiller's license. Yeah. But what you do when you make an Icebox is you partially freeze the beer. Okay. The water will freeze before the alcohol portion does. And it just so happens that a lot of the flavor active chemicals will stay in the alcohol portion.
Right. And it concentrates the flavors and it concentrates the alcohol.
And they're very great beers.
They are, and they're usually they're so luscious and delicious and smooth. And
but none of us have ever thought about or made one
because
it is illegal if you don't have a distiller's license, and that goes for those of you at home too.
Yes,
because that's any method of concentrating alcohol is distilling, whether it's using heat or cold. So. Now that the NSA listens
to every
single thing we do and reads all of your text messages.
Did you hear that, guys?
Yeah.
Don't tempt fate.
Don't put that beer in the freezer.
When the ATF gets mad, you know what happens.
All right, so Tony, no ice beer But cold filtration is just a marketing ploy. That's pretty much what we got it down to, correct, gentlemen?
Cold filtration is necessary.
Yeah.
But everybody that's filtering their beer
does
that.
It cold. All
right, so they just
it's
want
nothing special.
Okay.
Right.
All right, so I think we can leave it there for our listeners. We'll do our underwriting credits, and we'll say goodbye to
Could I just mention we have an event at the pump station that they're going to have a discussion of the Albany Ale Project on Sunday at 4 o'clock.
This Sunday?
Yes.
At 4 o'clock at the Albany Pump Station in downtown Albany.
And we're having a beer dinner at Druthers on November 20th.
All right.
And we have beer every day.
Every day.
All right. So that's what's happening in the beer world with our three beer czars. Underwriting support for Vox Pop comes from... Underwriting support for Vox Pop comes from Bow Wow Bathhouse Resort and Daycare, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, for over 7 years, providing 10 hours of daily indoor-outdoor play, professional grooming, and retail shop, the BowWowBathhouse.com. The Honest Weight Food Co-op, open at their new location, 100 Water Vliet Avenue, Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, and more, honestweight.coop. Springhouse Spa, Sharon Springs, New York, a modern-day spa in a historic setting. Appointments and gift certificates available online, springhousespa.com. And from New England Auctions, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. For 40 years, an international auction gallery offering fine art, books, maps, and antiques. 413-665-3253 for gallery and auction information. I'd like to thank our guests again, George DePiro, Paul McElhane, and Jim Roger Savoy. Thank you for joining us today. And stay tuned for national and regional news with Jessica Marshall-Blaustein.